I'm here at CKUT with Jethro Tullin, who is an indigenous human rights activist from Papua New Guinea with the Porgera Alliance. Jethro, welcome to the program.
Yep.
I mean, you've waged an international battle against Barrick Gold, which is a Canadian gold mining company in your country, Papua New Guinea, for over a decade. And you're in Canada this week to talk about a recent spike in human rights abuses that have been happening related to a Barrick Gold mine. So can you tell us what brought you to Canada this week and what you're going to be discussing about?
What brought me to Canada this week is mainly to follow up on the Canadian government sanction on what they call it National Contact Point for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Trade and Development, to examine, on a mediation, to examine human rights violation by Barrick Gold in Papua New Guinea. And we were engaged in dialogue, and after the outcome, Barrick has not come back to dialogue with the modifiers or the complaints that we filed. At the same time, despite of our campaign against what has gone wrong at the Porgera mine site, in Papua New Guinea, Barrick has continued to practice, I mean, do the same thing that we have been making allegations against in recent time. Recently, just in June, there was a burning down of the same village that got burned down in 2009. And a young man with a wife and a five-year-old kid were left behind by shooting somebody at the mine site in July. So I've just come out to Canada to alert the authorities concerned and alert Barrick that what they say, that we have changed our character, we have changed our style of management, we operate our business with best international standard practice, is opposite of what they say. So I'm just coming out to Canada to tell again that Barrick is not doing what they have preaching here. I mean, telling the Canadian public that they are good in a reputable international company, but actually practically on the ground in Papua New Guinea, where they do their business in extracting gold, is opposite of what they say. I mean, huge violation of human rights since 89 to date.
The majority of gold mining companies operating around the world today are actually Canadian and registered in Canada and in Canadian stock exchanges. But few Canadians seem to really know the effects that these mining companies have in the countries where they're operating. So you've come here from Papua New Guinea. We're talking about the Barrick Gold's Porgera joint venture mine in Papua New Guinea. Can you tell us about some of the effects that this mine has had on local residents who live near the mining site?
Well, on record, the records are huge in terms of discharge of tailings is one indirectly into the environment a never-ending story, which the impacts of it will be felt later by discharge of tailings, and waste management is poor on record. And human right, on the side of human rights violations, they have we have on record number of women being raped at the mine site, and just after number of pleas and after number of allegations that we made against Barrick over the years, it's finally come to give in and saying, okay, I'm introducing a remedy framework for the woman who have been sexually abused at the Porgera mine site by his company security guards and his employees. And number of killings, is the record has gone over 30 now. At one stage it was 30, so I understand it has gone up towards 40 level now. On the killing of, I mean, killing is in using excessive force like firearms to kill local indigenous landowners of who are normally going about doing their business in their own land.
Mm-hmm. And so this mine that we're talking about, the Barrick Gold Porgera joint venture mine, where exactly in Papua New Guinea is that located?
Porgera mine is located in the interior part of islands of Papua New Guinea, which is high up in the rugged terrain. It's about 620 kilometers southwest of Port Moresby, the nation's capital. So it's right in the islands of Papua New Guinea, in the center of the, if you look at the island of New Guinea, somewhere inside the interior part of Papua New Guinea, yep.
Mm-hmm. And are you from this area where the mine is located?
I am from the area, the locality of the, where the mine is area, where the mine is located. I'm from that area.
Mm. And can you tell us, so, I mean, you've been involved in a fight against Barrick Gold and their human rights abuses, as we said, for more than a decade. What pushed you to take up this battle against Barrick?
Well, what inspired me is these are big multinational companies with operations worldwide, and they say that they practice, they operate under best international rules, best standard practice, mm-hmm. practically applicable to it. And when they come to Canada, they tell the Canadian public and the media that, well, where we go, we operate and we apply the best international standard practice. But and practically, when you look at the situation on the ground in Papua New Guinea, it's opposite of what they preach or what they say out here. And what inspired me is you cannot just say, kill somebody and say, I'm killing him for self-defense. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm going out and about doing my own, on my own land, and you just come and say, yeah, I have a permit here to do mining here, and if I'm crisscrossing, interfering or going about your way, then you just kill me and say, well, you have been illegally occupying or passing through my land, so you got shot. And so I don't think that's the rule, the proper rule to just kill somebody and say like that, or you rape somebody and say it's a culture practice. That's what the chairman of Barrick Gold, Peter Monk, one time said about 2 years ago. He said, well, gang rape is a culture habit in Papua New Guinea. I don't see, we don't even in my, the place that I come from, the village that I come from, the tribe that I come from, we don't even allow a single woman to be raped. And the young girls are a valuable community in our, a commodity in our society. And if somebody is to marry a woman, then a young girl, then there's a huge price on top of it. But these are the kind of things that the company has been practicing and saying, and so it compelled me to just stand up and say, well, this is not what you're supposed to be. If it is in Canada, you will not do that. Mm-hmm. But in here, you come in here and kill our young boys. In Papua New Guinea, you come and kill our young boys. In Papua New Guinea, you come and rape our young girls, and then say, it's just another normal habit. Mm-hmm. But if it is in Canada here, I don't think anybody will allow Barrick to operate a mine like in that behavior. So that's why even we have a system, you know, Papua New Guinea is a territorial country, so, you know, there's a weak system in place. So they take advantage of the situation, given situation, and they exploit to the fullest to buy time, mm-hmm. at a cost and take more out. So you see, it took a while for me to come out and say, okay, enough is enough. I don't think you're supposed to be doing operating a mine like that in Canada. So we see where we stand. And we started compiling all reports and documentation of all killings and all rape cases. And we, in around 2004, we started documenting. And by 2005-06, we spread the news out with friendly organizations in Canada, like Mining Watch Canada, Mining Injustice Solidarity Network from Toronto, and all this bunch of people came together, and we were put together, and a number of other reputable institutions like Abbott Law Clinic, New York University Law Clinic have come into documentation of all this stuff, and slowly we put the information out, and that's the way it is now. I mean, are we trying to get the company accountable, at least some form of accountability for what they are doing? Because when they in Canada, they say, oh, we go over there and do business in a more humanely and in the best international standard practice. Whether it is business in Africa or in Papua New Guinea or in the Pacific or in South America, in third world countries, these big companies go and they come back and tell the same. But about, I know that 60% of the world's mining companies are registered in Toronto, or the stock exchange in a Canadian base. And Barrick is the largest gold producer, and their behavior, in actually practical behavior on the ground in operating one of the biggest mines in the world, Pogra Mine, is totally different from what they tell their shareholders and the public here in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, your message is so important for Canadians to hear, again, because a lot of the information about Canadian mining companies around the world isn't coming out to the public as much as it should be here. You talked about that discrepancy between, you know, what would normally be illegal in Canada, kind of companies getting away with it scot-free in Papua New Guinea and in many countries around the world, and many of the atrocities that Barrick, again, a Canadian gold company, commits in Papua New Guinea, such as dumping toxic waste into your river system, would be illegal if it was practices being done here in Canada. How should Canadians reckon with these realities that you're bringing forward about your home country, Papua New Guinea?
Well, that's a difficult question you ask, but the ask is, there is no law in Canada that can hold accountable for Canadian companies committing crimes outside of Canada. Even if they do the damage in Papua New Guinea or in any other Africa or anywhere, they still come back here. This is a safe haven. Even their government, I think, protects them. And mm-hmm. I think the Canadian mining companies are the highest supported operations around the globe by the Canadian government. So you see, in one way or another, the government actually is supporting the companies to go in, because 60% of the mining companies are Canadians. So the government of Canada does support, but the public needs to stand out, hear what is exactly what they do, how they operate in those countries, and then when they come back, they tell the different story. Because what in the countries that they operate, where like in Papua New Guinea, where they come in to extract gold and other minerals, the behavior and the pattern and the way they operate to take those minerals out is inhumane. It's against some of the best international standard practice. Well, after doing the business over there, and when they come here, they give a different story. But in reality, it is opposite of what they say here. A lot of killings, a lot of rapes, a lot of burning down, displacing of people, a lot of all these things are happening right in front of our. I mean, in my locality, in Pogra and Papua New Guinea, and even the government of Papua New Guinea knows that, but they are weak governments in terms of third world countries, who developing countries, depending on this kind of big companies to come in and put up a little bit of road or a little bit of this and that, and then take things out. So it's like these companies are very clever in tailoring how to control the government and how to control the local authorities, including the civil servants of this kind of governments in place. So it's a little bit, they know how to go in and exploit and then come back here and say, oh, we go over there and do business good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've come to Canada before in the past to bring, you know, these allegations and these concerns directly to Barrick Gold shareholders and at company meetings. What has been the response of shareholders or people in the Barrick Gold company?
Well, I started coming here since 2008, and every time I appeared at the shareholders meeting in Toronto around media every year, every time we seems to be getting the same response. At least it took for a while, and then Barry came up on non-sexual violence or rape against women. They recently introduced a remedy framework for women who have been sexually abused by company security guards. So that remedy program finally is in a small way, but at least we are making a breakthrough. At least the company is saying, now I'm at fault. Mm. Every time they've been denying. We don't know. But now, there's something went wrong, or what happened, we don't know, but we keep talking. So they have finally come out and say, okay, we have made a mistake. Our employees have made a mistake. A number of women have, but the funny thing about that is that most of the women that are going into the remedy framework program are told to sign a waiver, a legal waiver that gives them the immunity from any legal action outside of Canada if these women want to take legal action against the company. And now we keep pressuring on for Barak to come up with other remedy on violence against men for those killings, as well as we are asking Barak to resettle the people of the indigenous people that we own the land within the special mining lease have to be resettled out, because at the moment we are sitting on the same lease area that the company is saying, I have the right to that land. The government has permitted me to do my mining business here. Now we have the traditional, by bed right, we have the same portion of land that we have never been shifted out. Both groups occupy the same land, so by bed right we have it, and by legally, under the introduced laws, common law, I think Barak has the right to do extract gold from. So for over a number of years, we've been asking Barak to resettle the indigenous landowners out of the SML, Special Mining Lease Area. When I say SML, it's Special Mining Lease Area, and some form of remedy for those sexually abused and for non-sexual abuse crimes that have been committed. And finally, the disposal of tailings directly into the environment. I know they say we are complying to standard practice or the rules that permit that the government has allowed us to dump at the level that has been permitted. But if it is in Canada or if it is in North America, America or in Canada, I don't think Barak will be allowed to discharge tailings direct into the environment and the river system.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're speaking with Jethro Tullin, who is an indigenous human rights activist from Papua New Guinea with the Porgera Alliance. We're talking about Barrick Gold, a Canadian mining company, and their human rights abuses at their mines in Papua New Guinea. Jethro, you talked a little bit about how your community has stood up to these mining projects. You talk about the documentation work, traveling here to Canada, speak to shareholders, this remedy program for women who have been sexually assaulted. Can you give a few other examples of how Indigenous people in Papua New Guinea are standing up and resisting mining?
Well, like my part of the world in Papua New Guinea, first white contact was about 60, 70 years ago, around the 1940s and 50s. And these mining companies came in around 70s, 80s. So we like seeing a first white man with all these goodies. It's, we thought, a better way to advance the style of living, a change. But that's the understanding that we had. And the government is a small federal government who needs money to put roads or build bridges or schools or these sort of things. Mm-hmm. So it's like excited thing for a new project like that. And when you have a first white contact about just only 60, 70 years ago. So we thought it's something to change for a while, but we never realized that what was hidden at the back. And now we see our own people have been shot in our own land. Now we find our own women and girls have been raped in our own backyard by employees of a multi-international company. Now we find that the same a multi-international company is dumping toxic waste, which it cannot dump it in their own country, in our backyard. It will have a catastrophic effect for a long, more than 100 years down the line. And now we see what has been promised. It's like clash of civilization or clash of culture or something. Well, white men coming with good stuff, good things, good benefits, development. In the name of development, the government brought them in. Government gave them a permit. Maybe they wavered some of the provisions in the laws to just pipe the way for these companies to come in and build these big mines and then put all these structures up and schools and roads and economic benefits will be connected to, but and social benefits. But on the other side of the coin is the worst part of it is a lot of people are dying, a lot of women have been raped, and most of the promises are not coming about. Mm-hmm. So that is why we are standing up and say, okay, if you cannot do or practice like that in Canada, why are you doing it here? And that's why we are bringing the message across to their base here, because they are Canadian companies. That's why I'm here speaking. Oh, wait, this is a Canadian company that behaves like that in Canada, in Papua New Guinea. But if it is in Canada, they will not behave like that.
Mm-hmm. So you're traveling around Canada this week to speak with people in government and different activists about this recent spike in human rights abuses in Papua New Guinea. But you're also heading to New York City on this trip where you're going to be speaking at the World Conference on Indigenous People at the United Nations. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're hoping to bring to that gathering there?
Well, in New York, it's a World Conference on Indigenous Peoples. It's a byproduct of the permanent Indigenous Permanent Forum, which is conducted annually. And this is one of the forums where a lot of these policies will be adopted in recognition of Indigenous peoples and the regions of the world that are caucuses. And I am one of the delegates from the Pacific. 38 have been selected to come from official delegates from the Pacific to be permitted to at the UN World Conference on Indigenous Peoples, and I am one of the official delegates. So what we are looking at is, my interest lies on the extractive industries. We are looking at provisions in the clause, maybe that will hold multi-international companies like Barrick accountable if they commit crimes against humanity outside of their home step. Like, currently, there's no law in Canada that can hold them accountable for what they are doing in Papua New Guinea. Secondly, we cannot, because we are poor people. I mean, we don't have the research capacity to hold these kind of companies accountable in any way, in any legal jurisdiction. And at the same time, we don't have that legal support from, like, the UN or any other places. And at the same time, like The Hague, the International Court of Law for Human Rights Abuse is only in government against government, and we don't have any organization that, excluding state, are not allowed to lodge complaint, or the mechanism there's no mechanism in the United Nations system or that can hold corporations like that accountable for crimes they commit outside of their own country or within those countries. So these are some of the things that we are looking at to formally put it in place so that it can be recognized through the United Nations system.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, what kind of solidarity would you like to see from people in Canada, you know, knowing now, people who are listening to this interview, knowing that there are Canadian mining companies carrying out these atrocities in Papua New Guinea? What kind of solidarity would you like to see?
The support that I would like to see, and please, that these companies should be accountable, held accountable, because we don't want them to escape without being punished for the crimes they commit against local people or indigenous people, my indigenous people in Papua New Guinea. I want these companies to be held accountable, and at least they are seen to be held accounted for. Mm-hmm. They have the money to control the media and other places, higher places up, where people like me, I'm just making noise here at a small radio station here. But this guy's a guy who run around with the bucks. So even despite of what they have, if they can be, the Canadian public can stand up and say, okay, if you go over to these kind of countries, I think, tell them to behave like you should behave here. You are behaving here, should be same rules should apply to any place that you go, because all humanity is, all human being is human being, mm-hmm. whether white or black or red or green. Or every human being is a human being, and they should be respected at the same level. Every business should be practiced the same way as if you have done in America or you've done in Canada. Papua New Guinea is no exception. Africa is no exception, any country in South America is no exception. You go out there to get the resource that you don't have here, you do it properly, get it properly, come back, and be reasonable and accountable. Don't just go out there, kill people, rape women, bend down houses, displace the landowners, and you come back here and say, oh, I go out there and I operate. I get those resources out. I do my mining business in the best international standard practice. I don't think that's the right way to do it. The Canadian public should tell if they are like ethical funds. I think most of the Canadian ethical funds are investors of big Canadian mining companies. So they should be telling through their holdings and say holdings directly that they should ethically be responsible for what they do.
Again, we've been speaking with Jethro Tullin, who is an indigenous human rights activist from Papua New Guinea with the Porgera Alliance, who's here in Canada this week to speak with politicians and with community organizations about human rights abuses, and as well to participate in the UN World Conference on Indigenous Peoples happening in New York City next week. Jethro, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. You're welcome.